Hi, this is Mrs. English, and I'm going to be reading from Richmond Lattimore's translation of Homer's Iliad. I'm beginning in Book 10. This book is often called the Dolinea, and you will know why in a few minutes. This particular book from the Iliad, Book 10, is very unique. You could lift Book 10 out of the Iliad and you wouldn't miss it. You wouldn't miss any part of the plot. This is another story. It's simply been inserted here. It's hard to say how original this material is, but it's fascinating. When we get into Greek tragedy later and study the Greek tragedians, Aeschylus, Sophocles, and Euripides, you will have some structured notes and you'll know that there is a play written by Euripides, and the title of the play is called Rhesus, and the subject of that play, Rhesus, is Book 10 of the Iliad. Very interesting. Let's begin. Now, beside their ships, the other great men of the Achaeans slept night long, with the soft bondage of slumber upon them. But the son of Atreus, Agamemnon, shepherd of the people, was held by no sweet sleep as he pondered deeply within him. As when the lord of Hera, the lovely-haired, flashes his lightning as he brings on a great rainstorm, or a hail incessant, or a blizzard at such time when the snowfall scatters on plowlands, or drives on somewhere on earth the huge edge of tearing battle. Such was Agamemnon, with the beating turmoil in his bosom from a deep heart, line 10. So there's a storm going on inside of Agamemnon, and all his wits were shaken within him. Now would he gaze across the plain to the Trojan camp, wondering at the number of their fires that were burning in front of Ilion, Troy, toward the high calls of their flutes and pipes, the murmur of people. Now, as he would look again to the ships and the Achaean people, the Greeks, he would drag the hair by its roots from his head, looking toward Zeus on high, and his proud heart was stricken with lamentation. Now, to his mind, this thing appeared to be the best counsel, first among men to seek out Nestor, the son of Neleus, to see if Nestor with him could work out a plan that would not fail, and one that might drive the evil away from all the Danaans. He stood upright and slipped the tunic upon his body, and underneath his shining feet he bound the fair sandals, and thereafter slung across him the tawny hide of a lion, glowing and huge, that swung to his feet and took up a spear. That's line 24. Notice that Agamemnon cannot sleep. He looks out across the plain. The Trojans did not go behind their walls last night. They slept out on the plain. They slept between the river and the Greek camp. And they sent into the city for sacrifices, for food. The Trojans are feeling very confident, and Agamemnon is worried. So he's seeking the counsel of Nestor. Line 25. So likewise trembling seized Menelaus. Neither on his eyes had sweet slumber descending settled, for fear that the Argives might suffer some hurt, they who for his sake over much water had come to Troy, bearing their bold attack to the Trojans. First of all, he mantled his broad back in a leopard's spotted hide, then lifting the circle of a brazen helmet, placed it upon his head, and took up a spear in his big hand, and went on his way to waken his brother, who was the great king of all Argives, one honored in his own land as a god is. He found him putting the splendid armor about his shoulders before the stern of his ship, and was welcomed as he came up to him. Line 35. It was Menelaus of the great war cry who spoke first. Why this arming, my brother? Is it some one of your companions you are stirring to go and spy on the Trojans? Yet I fear sadly there will not be any man to undertake this endeavor, going against enemy fighters to spy on them, alone through the immortal night. Such a man will have to be very bold-hearted. Then in turn, powerful Agamemnon answered him, You and I, illustrious O Menelaus, have need now of crafty counsel, if any man is to defend and rescue the Argives and their ships, since the heart of Zeus is turned from us. For the sacrifices of Hector have stirred his heart more than ours have. No, for I never saw nor heard from the lips of another of a single man in a day imagining so much evil as Hector, beloved of Zeus, has wrought on the sons of the Achaeans, alone, being called true son, neither of a god nor a goddess, He has done things I think the Argives will remember with sorrow long into the future. Such harm has he devised to the Achaeans. But go now, running lightly beside the ships, and call to us Idomeneus and Aias, while Ajax, while I shall go after Nestor the Brilliant, and wake him to rise, if he might be willing to approach the sacred duty of the guards, or give orders to them. Above all, these would listen to him, seeing that his own son commands the pickets, and with him the follower of Idomeneus, Meriones. To these, above all, we entrusted the duty. Line 60. Then in turn, Menelaus of the great war cry answered him, How then do you intend this order that you have given me? Shall I wait where I am with them and watch for your coming, or run after you when I've properly given the order? Then in turn, the lord of men, Agamemnon, spoke to him, Better wait here. So there will be no way we can miss one another as we come and go. There are many paths up and down the encampment. Call out wherever you go and waken each man to give him your orders, naming him by descent with the name of his father. Give each man due respect. Let not your spirit be haughty. Line 70. But let it be you and I ourselves who do the work, seeing that Zeus cast on us as we were born this burden of evil. So he spoke, and with careful orders sent off his brother, and he himself went in search of Nestor, shepherd of the people, and came on him beside his own shelter and his own black ship in a soft bed, and his bright gear was lying beside him, the shield and the two spears and the glittering helmet, and by him lay in all its shining the war belt in which the old man girt himself when he armed for the fighting where men die, leading his own people, since he gave no ground to sorrowful old age. So he fought, even though he's very old. Line 80. He straightened up and raised his head, leaning on one elbow, and spoke to the son of Atreus and asked him a question. Who are you, who walk alone through the ships and the army, and through the darkness of night when other mortals are sleeping? Are you looking for one of your mules, or looking for some companion? Speak, do not come upon me in silence. What would you of me? Then in turn, the lord of men Agamemnon answered him, Nestor, son of Neleus, great glory of the Achaeans, you will know Atreus' son Agamemnon, whom beyond others Zeus has involved in hard work forever, as long as life's wind stays in my breast, as long as my knees have their spring beneath me. I am driven thus because the ease of sleep will not settle on my eyes, but fighting in the cares of the Achaeans perplex me. Terribly I am in dread for the Danaans, nor does my pulse beat steadily, but I go distracted, and my heart is pounding through my chest, and my limbs, shining limbs, are shaken beneath me. But if you are for action, since sleep comes neither upon you, let us both go out to the pickets, where the guards are, so that we may see if they might not have found weariness too much for them. Make sure the guards haven't fallen asleep. And fallen asleep and altogether forgotten their duty to keep watch. Line 100. There are men who hate us sitting nearby, nor do we know that they might not be pondering an attack on us in the darkness. Thereupon, the Geranian, the older horseman Nestor, answered him, Son of Atreus, most lordly and king of men, Agamemnon, Zeus of the councils, I think, will not accomplish for Hector all his designs and all he hopes for now. I think, rather, he will have still more hardships to wrestle, if ever Achilles turns again the heart within him from its wearisome anger. Surely I will go with you, and let us also waken others, the son of Tydeus, Diomedes, the spear-famed, and Odysseus, and Aias, Ajax, the swift-footed, and the powerful son of Phyleus. But if one were to go also and call these others I speak of, Aias the great, Ajax the godlike one, and the lord Idomeneus, why, their ships lie farthest from us, and are not at all close. But, beloved as he is and respected, I will still blame Menelaus, even though you be angry, and I will not hide it, for the way he sleeps and has given to you alone all the hard work. So Nestor says that I'm mad at Menelaus that he lets you go up and down the camp, waking everybody up. For now he ought to be hard at work going to all the great men in supplication. This need that has come is no more endurable. Then in turn the lord of men Agamemnon spoke to him. Line 120. Aged sir, other times I also would tell you to blame him, since often he hangs back and is not willing to work hard, and not that he shrinks from it and gives way, nor in the mind's dullness, but because he looks to me and waits till I make a beginning. But this time he woke far before me and came to rouse me, and I sent him on to call those you ask after. Therefore let us go. We shall find those others there with the sentries before the gates, where I told them to form and assemble. Thereupon the Geranian horseman Nestor answered him, Thus no man of the archives can disobey him, nor find fault with him, whenever he stirs any of them up and gives orders. Line 130. With this speech, he slipped the tunic upon his body, and underneath his shining feet he bound the fair sandals, and pinned about him a great vermilion mantle, sweeping in a double fold, with a thick fleece of wool upon it. Then he caught up a powerful spear, edged with sharp bronze, and went on his way down the ships of the bronze-armored Achaeans. First he came on Odysseus, the equal of Zeus in council, and Nestor the Geranian horseman wakened him from sleep, speaking aloud, and the wave of the voice swept quick through his hearing, and he came forth from his shelter and called out his word to them. "Why do you wander up thus and down the ships and the army alone through the immortal night? What need is upon you?" Thereupon the Geranian horseman Nestor answered him, "A son of Laertes and seed of Zeus, resourceful Odysseus, do not be angry. Such grief has fallen upon the Achaeans. Come then with us to waken another, for whom it is becoming to deliberate the question of running away or of fighting. Let's go wake up somebody else. We've got to talk about whether we're going to run away or fight." He spoke, and resourceful Odysseus, moving back into his shelter, put the bright patterned shield on his shoulders and went on with them. Line 150. They went to the son of Tydeus, Diomedes, and found him with his gear outside the shelter, and his companions about him, slept with their shields underneath their heads and their spears beside them. They stood upright. The spears were beside them, stood upright, the heels driven deep in the ground, and the bronze afar off glared like the lightning of Zeus' father. The hero slept, with the hide of a field-ranging ox laid beneath him, but underneath his head was laid out a lustrous blanket. Nestor, the Geranian horseman, stood by to waken him and rouse him, stirring him with his heel, and scolded him to his face. "Son of Tydeus, wake up! Why do you doze in slumber night long?" Line 160. "Do you not hear how the Trojans at the break of the flat land are sitting close to our ships, and narrow ground holds them from us?" So he spoke, and the other rapidly stirred from his sleeping, and spoke winged words to him, and addressed him thus, "Aged sir, you are a hard man. You are never finished with working. Now are there not other sons of the Achaeans younger than you are, who could be going about everywhere to each of the princes and waking them up? But you, aged sir, are too much for us." In turn, Nestor the Geranian horseman said to him, "Yes, dear friend, all this that you said has been fairly spoken. I myself have sons without blame. I have followers, plenty of them, of whom any could go to summon the princes. But this difficulty is very great that has come to the Achaeans, since for all of us the decision now stands on the edge of a razor, whether the Achaeans shall have life or destruction. But go now to Aias, Ajax, line 175, Ajax the swift and the son of Phyleus, and waken them. You're younger than I, if truly you have pity." He spoke, and the other wrapped his shoulders in the hide of a lion, glowing and huge, that swung to his feet and took up a spear. The hero went, and waking the others, brought them back with him. Now, as these men mingled with the sentries assembling, they found the leaders of the pickets by no means asleep, so the guards are not asleep, but all of them were wide awake and sat by their weapons. As dogs, how did they sit by their weapons? As dogs about the sheep in a yard are restless and watching as they hear a wild beast boldly moving, who through the timber goes among the mountains, and a clamor rises about him of men and of dogs, and all their sleep has been broken from them. So for these, the softness of sleep was broken from their eyes, as they held the bitter mid-watch, since they were turning always toward the plain, where they heard the Trojans coming and going. The aged man was glad when he saw them, and with speech of good cheer, line 190, spoke winged words to them and addressed them thus, "Continue to keep your watch this way, beloved children, and let not sleep seize any, lest you become a delight to your enemies." So he spoke, and strode on through the ditch, and there followed with him the king of the Argives, all who had been called into conclave. And with them went Meriones and Nestor's glorious son, since the kings themselves called these to take counsel with them. After they had crossed the deep dug ditch, they settled on clean ground, where there showed a space not cumbered with corpses of the fallen, a place whence Hector the huge had turned back from destroying the Argives after the night had darkened about him. So they are looking for a place for a meeting to take counsel, and they have to find a spot not too cluttered with corpses. So they found the spot just past where Hector quit killing people. line 202. There they seated themselves and opened words to each other, and the Geranian horseman Nestor began speaking among them. "O my friends, is there no man who, trusting in the daring of his own heart, would go among the high-hearted Trojans? So he might catch some enemy who straggled behind them, or he might overhear something that the Trojans are saying, what they deliberate among themselves, and whether they purpose to stay where they are, close to the ships, or else to withdraw back into their city, now that they've beaten the Achaeans, us, the Greeks." So Nestor, at this night council, is saying, "We need some volunteer spies." Line 211. "Could a man learn this, and then come back again to us unhurt? Why, huge and heaven high would rise up his glory, his Kleos, among all people, and an excellent gift, his teammate, would befall him. For all those who hold by the ships, high power as princes, of all these, each of them will give him a black sheep, female with a lamb beneath. There shall be no gift like this one, one that will be forever by at the feasts and festivals." So he spoke, and all of them stayed stricken to silence. Okay, nobody's jumping up to volunteer. Line 219. But now Diomedes of the great war cry spoke forth among them. "Nestor, my own heart and my own proud spirit arouse me to go into the host of the hateful men who lie near us, the Trojans. But if some other man would go along with me, there would be more comfort in it, and greater confidence. When two go together, one of them at least looks forward to see what is best. A man by himself, though he be careful, still has less mind in him than two, and his wits have less weight." He spoke, and many were willing to go with Diomedes. The two Iontes, Telamonian Ajax and a lesser Ajax, were willing, henchmen of Ares, and likewise Meriones, and Nestor's son, altogether willing, and Atreus's son was willing, Menelaus, the spear-famed, and patient Odysseus, too, was willing to enter the multitude of Trojans, since forever the heart in his breast was daring. And now it was the lord of men, Agamemnon, who spoke to them. "A son of Tydeus, you who delight my heart, Diomedes, pick your man to be your companion, whichever you wish, the best of all who have shown, since many are eager to do it. You must not, for the awe that you feel in your heart, pass over the better man and take the worse, giving way to modesty and looking to his degree, not even if he be kinglier." Here we have a hint that perhaps Agamemnon is suggesting that Diomedes might look past his own brother Menelaus. 240. So he spoke, and was frightened for Menelaus of the fair hair. But now again Diomedes of the great war cry spoke forth. "If indeed you tell me to pick my companion, how then could I forget Odysseus the godlike, he whose heart and whose proud spirit are beyond all others forward in all hard endeavors, and Pallas Athena loves him. Were he to go with me, both of us could come back from the blazing of fire itself, since his mind is best at devices," which means, "I like Odysseus because he's smart." Line 248. Then in turn, long-suffering, brilliant Odysseus answered him, "Son of Tydeus, do not praise me so, nor yet blame me. These are the Argives, the Greeks, who know well all these matters you speak of. But let us go, for the night draws far along, and the dawn nears. The stars have gone far on their course, and the full of the night has passed by. There are two portions, and the third portion is that which is left us." So they spoke, and armed themselves in their weapons of terror. And Thrasymedes, the stubborn in battle, gave the son of Tydeus a two-edged sword. His own had been left behind by his vessel, and a shield, and he put over his head a helmet of bull's hide, which with neither horn nor crest, which is known as the skull cap, and guards the heads of strong men in battle. While Meriones gave Odysseus a bow and a quiver, line 260, and a sword, and he too put over his head a helmet fashioned of leather. On the inside, the cap was cross-strung firmly with thongs of leather, and on the other side, the white teeth of a tusk-shining boar were close sewn one after another with craftsmanship and skill, and a felt was set in the center. Autolycus, breaking into the close-built house, had stolen it from Amtenor, the son of Orminus, out of Ilion, and gave it to Catharian Amphidamus at Scandea. Amphidamus, now we are getting the pedigree of this shining boar tusk helmet. This is the pedigree. It had been stolen. Autolycus had stolen it. Line 269. Amphidamus gave it in turn to Malus, a gift of guest friendship. This is Xenia. And Malus gave it to his son Meriones to carry. But at this time, it was worn to cover the head of Odysseus. It's very interesting. This is the pedigree of a helmet, a boar tusk helmet. This is an ancient Mycenaean helmet. Autolycus, the original here, 266, had stolen it. He is a thief. He's also the maternal grandfather of Odysseus. We'll see that in the Odyssey, book 19, line 395. They'll mention this. 271. But at this time, it was worn to cover the head of Odysseus. So these men have not gone back to their own ships to arm themselves, because two-thirds of the night is done. They have to arm themselves with whatever is at hand and get going. When these two had armed themselves in their weapons of terror, they went on their way, and left behind there all the princes. And on the right, near the way they were taking, Pallas Athena sent down a heron to them. Indeed, their eyes could not see it through the darkness of night, but they could hear it crying. And Odysseus was glad at the bird sign, and prayed to Athena, "Hear me, daughter of Zeus of the Aegis, you who forever stand beside me in all hard tasks, nor am I forgotten as I go my ways. Now give me the best of your love, Athena, and grant that we come back in glory in Kleos to the strong-benched vessels when we have done a great thing that will sadden the Trojans." Diomedes of the great war cry spoke in prayer after him. "Hear me also, Atreatone," it's Athena, "daughter of great Zeus. Come with me now as you went with my father, brilliant Tydeus," line 285. "In Thebes, when he went with a message before the Achaeans, the Greeks, and left the bronze-armored Achaeans beside Asepus, when he carried a word of friendship to the Cadmeans in that place, but on his way back he was minded to grim deeds with your aid, divine goddess, since you stood in goodwill beside him. So now again be willing to stand by me and watch over me, and I in turn will dedicate you a heifer, broad-browed, 1 year old, unbroken, that no man ever led under the yoke. I will drench her horns in gold and offer her to you." So this is better than regular sacrifice. You will put gold leafing on the horns of this heifer and then offer it in sacrifice. Line 295. So they spoke in prayer, and Pallas Athena heard them. Then, after they had made their prayers to the daughter of great Zeus, they went on their way, like two lions, into the black night, through the carnage and through the corpses, war gear and dark blood. Nor did Hector, now we're back to the Trojan camp, nor did Hector either permit the high-hearted Trojans to sleep, line 300, but had called together in a group all of their great men, those who were the leaders of Troy and their men of deliberation. Summoning these, he compacted before them his close council. Who would take upon him this work and bring it to fulfillment for a huge price? The reward will be one that will suffice him, for I will give a chariot and 2 strong-necked horses, who are the finest of all beside the fast ships of the Achaeans, to him who has the daring, a winning honor, Time, for himself also, to go close to the swift-running ships and find out for us whether the ships are guarded, as they were before this, or whether now the Achaeans, the Greeks, who are beaten under our hands, are planning flight among themselves, maybe they're running away, and no longer are willing to guard them by night, now that stark weariness has broken them. So Hector also, the Trojans, have the same idea. We need to send a spy out and see what they're doing. So he spoke, and all of them were stricken to silence. But there was one among the Trojans, Dolon, and remember this book is called the Dolonea. There was one among the Trojans, Dolon, Eumedes' son, the sacred heralds, a man of much gold and much bronze. He was an evil man to look on, but was swift-footed. Moreover, he was a single son among 5 sisters. This man now spoke his word before the Trojans and Hector. "Hector, my own heart and my proud spirit arouse me to go close to the swift-running ships and learn about them. Come then, hold up your scepter before me, and swear upon it that you will give me the horses and the chariot made bright with bronze that carry the blameless son of Peleus. What does Dolon want as a prize? He wants Achilles' chariot and Achilles' horses. I shall not be a vain spy for you, nor less than your expectation, for I'll go straight on through their army until I come to the ship of Agamemnon, where their greatest men must be gathered to deliberate the question of running away or fighting. He spoke, and Hector took the staff in his hand and swore to him, Lord Zeus, loud thundering lord of Hera, now be my witness himself that no other man of the Trojans shall mount these horses, since I say they shall be utterly yours, and your glory, your Kleos. The irony here, of course, is that Hector and Dolon in the Trojan camp are discussing the very best of the Greek horses, and the truth is that when the night is over, it will be the Greeks who will be getting the best of the Trojan horses. Read on, line 332. He spoke and swore to an empty oath, and stirred the man onward. And at once Dolon cast across his shoulders the bent bow. He put on about him the pelt of a gray wolf, and on his head set a cap of marten's hide, and took up a sharp throwing spear, and went on his way toward the ships from his own camp, nor was he ever to come back again from the ships and carry his word to Hector. There we have a bit of foreshadowing. Now, when he had left behind the throng of men and of horses, he went on his way, eagerly, but illustrious Odysseus was aware of him coming, and spoke to Diomedes. This is some man, Diomedes, on his way from the army. I do not know whether he comes to spy on our vessels, or to strip some one of the perished corpses, but we must let him first go on past us a little way in the open, and afterwards we will make a rush and fasten upon him. Line 345. Fasten upon him suddenly, but if in the speed of his feet he eludes us, then keep him crowded upon the ships and away from the army always, fainting with the spear, and nor let him escape to the city. So they spoke, and bent aside from their way through the corpses, while he, in the thoughtlessness of his heart, Dolon, ran swiftly by them. But he was gone from them as far as the range of a plough yoke of mules, since these are better beasts than oxen for dragging the wrought plowshare through the depth of the harvest land. These, too, ran after him, and he heard the thudding of their feet and stopped still. He thought in his heart these would be friends from among the Trojans, line 355, to turn him back, and that Hector had sped them to summon him again. But when they got to a spear's throw from him, or less even, he saw that these were enemy men, and moved his knees rapidly to run away, and these set out in rapid chase of him. And as when, here's another simile, as when two rip-fanged hounds have sighted a wild beast, line 360, a young deer or a hare to go after it, eagerly always through the spaces of the woods, and the chase runs crying before them, so the son of Tydeus, Diomedes, and Odysseus, sacker of cities, kept always hard on his heels and cut him off from his people. But when he was on the point of reaching the Achaean, the Greek pickets, as he fled through toward the vessels, then Athena put great power in Tydeus's son, Diomedes, so that no other bronze-armored Achaean might win the glory of striking him down, the Kleos. So Athena makes certain that Diomedes will get the glory of the catch, not another Greek. Might win the glory of striking him down, and he come in second. Powerful Diomedes, threatening with the spear, spoke to him, line 370. Either wait, or my spear will catch you. I think that you will not thus get clear from my hands for long and sudden destruction. He spoke and let fly with his spear, but missed on purpose his man, as the point of the polished spear went over his right shoulder and stuck fast in the earth. And Dolon stood still in terror, gibbering, as though his mouth came the sound of his teeth's chatter in green fear. And these two, breathing hard, came up to him and caught him by the hands, and he broke into tears and spoke to them, Take me alive, and I will pay my ransom. In my house there is bronze and gold and difficultly wrought iron, and my father would make you glad with abundant ransom were he to hear that I am alive by the ships of the Achaeans. Then resourceful Odysseus spoke in turn and answered him, Do not fear. Let no thought of death be upon you, but come, tell me this thing and recite it to me accurately. Line 385. Where is it that you walk alone? To the ships from the army, through the darkness of night, when other mortals are sleeping. Is it to strip some one of the perished corpses, or is it that Hector sent you out to spy with care upon each thing beside our hollow ships? Or did your own spirit drive you? Then Dolan answered him, but his legs were shaking beneath him. Hector has led my mind astray with many deceptions. He promised me the single-footed horses of proud Achilles, Peleus's son, and the chariot bright with bronze for my gift, and gave me an order to go through the running black night and get close to the enemy men and find out for him whether the swift ships are guarded, as they were before this, or whether now the Achaeans, who are broken under our hands, are planning flight to run away among themselves and no longer are willing to guard them by night, now that stark weariness has broken them. Now, the listener, Homer's audience, can only imagine the Greek listeners laughing to think of Dolon aspiring to get and win the horses and the chariot of Achilles. Line 400. Then Odysseus the resourceful smiled and spoke to him. Oh, surely now these were mighty gifts that your heart longed after. The horses of valiant Aeacides, that's of course Achilles, the grandson of Aeacus. They are difficult horses for mortal men to manage, or even to ride behind them, for all except Achilles, who was born of an immortal mother. But come, tell me this thing and recite it to me accurately. Line 405. So Odysseus is now interrogating Dolon. Where did you leave Hector, the people's shepherd, when you came here? Where is his gear of war lying? Where are his horses? How are the rest of the Trojans disposed, the guards and the sleepers? What do they deliberate among themselves? Do they propose to stay where they are, close to the ships, or else to withdraw back into the city now that they've beaten the Achaeans? So this is quite the interrogation. Then in turn, Dolon, the son of Eumedes, spoke to him. And he rats on the Trojans. I will accurately recite all these things to you. Hector is now among those who are the men of counsel, and they hold their deliberations by the barrow of godlike Ilus. Now, a barrow is a funeral mound, and Ilus is why Troy is called Ilion. So they are by the grave of the grandfather of Priam, the king who founded Troy. So, let's see, line 415. And they hold their deliberations by the barrow of godlike Ilus, apart from the confusion. But those guards that you ask of, hero, there is no detail that protects the army and guards it. As for the watchfire hearths of the Trojans, those who must do it keep awake by the fires and pass on the picket duty to each other. But their fast, far-assembled companions in battle are sleeping and pass on to the Trojans the duty of watching, since their own children do not lie nearby, nor their women. So Dolon just spilled his guts about everything. Then resourceful Odysseus spoke in turn and answered him, how then are these sleeping? And are they mixed with the Trojans, breakers of horses, or apart? Tell me, so I may be clear. Then in turn, Dolon, the son of Eumedes, answered him, I will accurately recite all these things to you. Next to the sea are the Carians, and the Paeonians with their curved bows, the Leleges and the Cauconians, and the brilliant Pelasgians. By Thymbra are stationed the Lycians and the proud Mysians, line 430. With the Phrygians, who fight from horses, and Maeonians, lords of chariot. But why do you question me on all this, each thing in detail? For if you are minded to get among the mass of the Trojans, here are the Thracians, new come separate, beyond all others in place, and among them Rhesus, their king, the son of Ioneus, line 435. So Dolon is now describing the Thracians. And the Thracians, you should know, worship Ares. This means the Thracians are going to be vicious, vicious warriors. And they're new come, they're fresh, they're not weary from battle. And his are the finest horses I ever saw, King Rhesus, and the biggest. They're whiter than snow, and their speed of foot is the wind's speed. His chariot is fairly ornate with gold and with silver, and the armor is golden and gigantic, a wonder to look on. That he brought here with him. It is not like armor for mortal men to carry, but for the immortal gods. And therefore, take me with you to some place by the fast-running vessels, or else tie me here, fast in a pitiless bond, and leave me until you make your venture and try out the truth of my story. So Dolan finished, and he says, okay, why don't you tie me up now, and then you can go see that I told you the truth. Line 445. But powerful Diomedes looked darkly at him, and spoke then, Do not, Dolan, have in your mind any thought of escape, now you have got in our hands, though you brought us an excellent message. For if we let you get away now, or set you free, later you will come back again to the fast ships of the Achaeans, either to spy on us once more, or to fight strongly with us. But if, beaten down under my hands, you lose your life now, then you will never more be an affliction upon the Argives. He spoke, and the man was trying to reach his chin with his strong hand and cling and supplicate him, but he struck the middle of his neck with a sweep of the sword and slashed clean through both tendons, and Dolan's head, still speaking, dropped in the dust. They took off his cap of marten's hide from his head and stripped off also the wolf's pelt and the back struck strung bow and a long spear. Line 460. Brilliant Odysseus held these up to Athena the spoiler, high in his hand, and spoke a word, and prayed to Athena, Hail, goddess, these are yours. To you, first of all the immortals on Olympus, we will give your due share. Only guide us once again to where the Thracians sleep, and their horses. So he spoke, and lifting the spoils high from him, he placed them upon a tamarisk bush, and piled a clear landmark beside them, pulling reeds together and the long branches of tamarisk, that they might not miss them on their way back through the running black night. So they're not going to take what they stripped off of Dolan with them. They need to go quietly. They'll pick it up on the way back. These two went ahead on their way through war gear and dark blood, line 470, and came suddenly to the Thracians, for whom they were looking. These were asleep, worn out with weariness, and their armor lay in splendor in good order on the ground beside them, in three rows, and beside each man stood his team of horses. Rhesus, the king, slept in the center with his fast horses about him, tethered by the reins to the outer rail of the chariot. Odysseus was the first to see him, and pointed him out to Diomedes. Here's our man, see, Diomedes, and here are his horses, those that Dolan, the man we killed, pointed out to us. Come then, put forward your great strength. Here is no matter for standing by idle in your weapons. Untie the horses, or else let me look after them while you kill the people. So Odysseus says to Diomedes here, Do you want to get the horses or kill the people? Okay, you kill them. And then Odysseus will coolly drag the bodies away to clear a path for the horses. Line 482. He spoke, and gray-eyed Athena breathed strength into Diomedes, and he began to kill them, one after another. Grim sounds rose from there as they were stricken with the sword and the ground reddened with blood. As a lion advancing on the helpless herds, unshepherded, of sheep or goats, pounces upon them with wicked intention, this is a Homeric simile, so the son of Tydeus attacked the Thracian people until he had killed 12. Meanwhile, resourceful Odysseus, as Tydeus' son, Diomedes, stood over each man with the sword and struck him, would catch each dead man by the foot from behind and drag him away, with this thought in his mind, that the bright-maned horses might pass easily through and not be shaken within them as stepping on dead men. So Odysseus coolly pulls the bodies away so the horses can walk through. These horses were not yet used to them, but when the son of Tydeus came to the king, and this was the 13th man, he stripped the sweetness of life from him as he lay heavily breathing, since a bad dream stood by his head in the night. No dream, but Oeneus' son by device of Athena. Diomedes was the grandson of Oeneus. Meanwhile, patient Odysseus was untying the single foot horses and pulled them together with the reins and drove them from the confusion, and whipped them with his bow, since he had not noticed nor taken in his hands the glittering whip that was in the elaborate chariot. He whistled to brilliant Diomedes as a signal to him, but he waited, divided in his mind as to what he would best do, whether to seize the chariot, wherein lay the bright armor, and draw it away by the pole, or lift it and carry it off with him, line 4, 505. or strip the life from still more of the Thracians. What should they do? Try and carry off the chariot, drag it off, or kill more Thracians? And meanwhile, as he was pondering all this in his heart, Athena came and stood beside him and spoke to great Diomedes. Think now, son of great-hearted Tydeus, of getting back to the hollow ships, else you might go back with men pursuing if there should be some other god to waken the Trojans. So she spoke, and he knew the voice of the goddess speaking, and lightly mounted behind the horses. Odysseus whipped them with his bow, and they ran for the rapid ships of the Achaeans. Line 515. Neither did Apollo of the silver bow keep blind watch, since he saw Athena attending the son of Tydeus. Angered with her, he plunged into the great multitude of the Trojans and roused a man of counsel among the Thracians, Hippocoon, the lordly cousin of Rhesus. And he, starting out of his sleep, line 520, when he saw the place left empty where the fast horses had been standing, and his men in the shambles of slaughter gasping their lives out, he groaned and called aloud by name his beloved companion. And a clamor rose up from the Trojans in a vast turmoil as they swept together in confusion and stared at the ghastly work done by these two men before they went back to their hollow vessels. So Apollo woke them all up. But when these had come back to the place where they killed Hector's scout, Odysseus, beloved of Zeus, reined in his running horses, while Tydeus' son, leaping to the ground, took the bloody war spoils and handed them to Odysseus and got up behind the horses. So even though they're in a hurry, they do stop and pick up all the spoils from Dolon. Line 530. Odysseus lashed them on, and they winged their way, unreluctant, back to the hollow ships, since this was the way he desired it. This is an interesting line. Line 531. The words, "since this was the way he desired it," is missing from most manuscripts of the Iliad. So if you are an Iliad scholar, you would cross these words out. Nestor was the first to hear their thunder and spoke forth. Friends, who are leaders of the Argives and keep their counsel, shall I be wrong or am I speaking the truth? My heart tells me the thunder is beating against my ears of fast-running horses. Might this only be Odysseus and strong Diomedes, driving rapidly away from the Trojans, their single-footed horses? Yet terribly I fear in my heart that these bravest Achaeans might have suffered some disaster from the loud host of the Trojans. Okay, they hear the loudness of the Trojans. There's a terrible noise coming from the Trojan camp, and Nestor thinks he hears the hooves of horses coming. Line 540. Yet he had not spoken all his words, and they came. The two men dismounted to the ground, and their companions, rejoicing, congratulated them with clasped hands and with words of welcome. First to question them was the Dranian horseman, Nestor. Come, tell me, honored Odysseus, great glory of the Achaeans, mega Kleos, how did you win these horses? Did you go into the great company of the Trojans, or did some god meet you and give them to you? They shine like the rays of the sun terribly, yet over and over I encounter the Trojans. I say that I am not at all one to hang back beside the ships, though I am an aged fighter. Yet I've never seen horses like these, nor laid eyes upon them. Line 550. So Nestor says, I've seen a lot of horses in my day, but I've never seen any like these. Line 551. I think it must be some god who met you and gave them to you, since both of you are beloved to Zeus, who gathers the clouds, both to the gray-eyed maiden of Zeus, who wears the aegis, Athena. Then resourceful Odysseus spoke in turn and answered him, Son of Neleus, Nestor, great glory, mega Kleos of the Achaeans. But lightly a god, if he wished, could give us horses even better than these, seeing that the gods are far stronger than we are. These horses, aged sir, that you ask about, are newcomers from Thrace. And as for their master, brave Diomedes killed him, and at his side killed 12 companions, all of them great men. Line 560. Our 13th man killed was their scout, here by the vessels, one whom Hector and the rest of the haughty Trojans had sent out between the lines to spy on our army. He spoke, and guided across the ditch the single-footed horses, laughing aloud, and the rest of the Achaeans went with him, rejoicing. This means across the ditch. That means the entire night council had waited on the other side of the ditch for them to come back. When they came to Diomedes' strong-fashioned shelter, there they tied up the horses by the carefully cut reins by the horse trough, where already the horses of Diomedes were standing, rapid of foot, and eating their welcome provender. and by the stern of the ship, Odysseus laid down the bloody battle spoils of Dolon to dedicate to Athena, and the men themselves waded into the sea and washed off the dense sweat from shin and shoulder and thigh. Afterwards, when the surf of the sea had rinsed the dense running sweat away from all their skin, and the inward heart had been cooled to refreshment, they stepped into the bathtubs, smooth polished, and bathed there. And after they had bathed and anointed themselves with olive oil, they sat down to dine, and from the full mixing bowl, drawing the sweet-hearted wine, poured out an offering to Athena. And here we have bathtubs in the Greek camp. And that's the end of book 10.